A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
At the end of season 2017-18, we demanded to know from you which of our big interviews you most enjoyed. And the winner is...
We're on the coach, and I can remember sitting there and thinking, okay, that's George Weah. Just sort of sitting there with his headphones on. The week he left, we played Bradford at home, and Joe put George on the bench and started me, and I think George thought, and Dickel's playing ahead of me, I've gone. But what a brilliant, brilliant guy.
In second place, we had...
I'm inspired by Rocky Balboa. One of my best meetings, I thought, was with Dortmund before we played a game against Bayern Munich. And I spoke about Rocky IV, Ivan Drago. So, of course, Bayern was Ivan Drago, having everything, all technology. And we are Rocky Balboa with all these old-fashioned tools and stuff like that. And after 3-4 minutes, I was really on fire. And I look really in dead eyes. And I said, okay, stop. Who knows Rocky? And only two players showed up. Okay.
We have to start again.
And the bronze medal position goes to this guy.
For me, David Egea is the best because I think he has something that comes from God. God chose him in the goal and God chose Messi on the pitch. You cannot train what he did against Kun Agüero when he had the ball 2 meters from him and he put the hand out. You cannot train it. So he has some special abilities that I think he hasn't trained them. You just have to.
From Backpage, I'm Martin Gregg, and this is the big interview at the World Cup. This is what you might call a World Cup wrap, and for it, we've asked our socios and Twitter followers to send in their questions. So without any further ado, Graham, our first question is from socio Ben, and it's a tricky one. He says, hi guys, thank you for all your superb content over the last season and the World Cup. First part of the question, who is Graham's unsung player and unsung team of the tournament?
I have a sneaking regard for Takashi Inoue in that role because I've seen very few people on the wider stage appreciating that he was probably Japan's best player. And although they tumbled at the end of their group, I thought that they played with adventure and pace. And, you know, I couldn't travel to the games because I was covering Spain. But when I flipped the television on, I enjoyed watching them. And they gave us, you know, every time we go crazy, or I do because I'm so enthusiastic about football, about a particular game, it does take two to tango. And had it not been for that sublime first, let's call it first hour, maybe something like that, against Belgium, after which, you know, it's really sad to say that they didn't handle the game particularly well. And Belgium thrilled us all with a 3-goal comeback, culminating in that last minute winner for Chadley. But Japan had, until that stage, run them ragged. They'd clearly analysed them brilliantly about how you could run at that 3-man defence and how to get wide in behind the wing-backs. It was lovely. And therefore, one of the candidates for that unsung team might be Japan. I have to go stick in Asia and say that although Korea, you know, genuinely disappointed in their, not just their... I thought they were niggly and without the right cutting edge and maybe even the right ambition in the first two games. But to go toe-to-toe, to go Rocky Marciano with Germany in that last game and tip everything from the years when I was growing up and learning about football, when it was always, they always won late, Bayern Munich, Borussia Mönchengladbach, the German national team. So to witness not just their elimination, but their elimination from a Korea side that scored twice after the 90th minute, even with Manuel Neuer three quarters of the way out the pitch for the second, I thought that was terrific. There's another unsung candidate in that this has been a tournament where goalkeepers, I think, have, you know, there's a cluster of goalkeepers where you can say they've boosted their reputation, they've shown their skills under great pressure, they've produced not just good housekeeping, which is how you, I think, you boost your reputation for proper football scouts if you're good housekeeping through a game in all circumstances, under pressure, not under pressure, accuracy of kicking, coming and taking free kicks, handling this moving ball that fooled Muslera and fooled David De Gea, etc. So there's a cluster of keepers who've come through not just because of big saves. But when he left the tournament, Mexico's Guillermo Ochoa had made the most saves and had kept Mexico in things. And if I'm not mistaken, Thibaut Courtois has made 27 saves over 7 games. And Guillermo Ochoa has made 25 over just 4 games. Now, I admire that and I like that. And I didn't know enough about him since maybe, probably Brazil was when he came most to my attention. And, you know, it was just bizarre to me how little use of him Malaga made. And I was so pleased for him because when he went to Belgian football, he nearly won the league in the build-up to this World Cup. They fell 3 points short in the playoffs. And I thought he had an exceptional tournament. And there's potential for another unsung hero. These aren't, you know, maybe big names. So the team, yeah, I'm arguing that Japan and Korea can be in there. Everybody else was sung about because the merits of Belgium and Croatia and England, I think, all got duly dusted down. The merits of Sweden in terms of maximising their efficacy without being truthfully all that pretty to watch. I go back to what I said a couple of weeks ago to Neil, that I always like watching Berg and Toivonen. I can't deny that. Forsberg should have given us more. Eriksen gave us glimpses. No, for unsung teams, for two different reasons, I'm going to stay in Asia and talk about Japan and Korea for two different reasons.
And just my little postscript to that, I'd actually written down Inoue and Japan as well. I loved Kagawa and Haraguchi for Japan. I thought they were fantastic. But I actually reread a book recently about Japanese football. And I think it's called something like Why the Japanese Needed Football and How They Got It. And it's about the infrastructure laid down when the J-League started, how it was an ambition to produce this generation of kind of technically accomplished footballers. And so when I watched that Japan-Belgium game, it was just really, really, really exciting to see.
You could see in front of your eyes what the book had been describing, right?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book, and I would urge anyone to go and read it. I think it's called something like Why the Japanese Needed Football and How They Got It by Sebastian Moffat, who's a really interesting guy. I think he was like a journalist for like the Wall Street Journal or something like that, and not a kind of traditional beat football journalist, but somebody from, you know, from the outside kind of looking in, and it was fantastic. But I would urge people to look at that. I just wish they could produce strikers, you know, top class strikers, because they would have it all just about.
The goals were spread, weren't they, through Kagawa and Honda, who in his time has been one of the fabulous strikers of a ball over the last sort of 8-10 years. And I've got a vested interest in Takashi Inoue because he's moved from Eibar, where, you know, he's been pretty spectacular in, again, being a mainstay. You have to say at least a mainstay in keeping them in the Primera for a record amount of seasons since promotion. And he's now just moved to Real Betis. And to me, he's working for an outrageously talented, fascinating coach in Kiki Setién, who, despite having been a hard-running, hard-working, principally Racing Santander midfielder, has taught us that he learned his attacking ideas. I keep maybe using similar anecdotes, but it's because they mean things to me. Sitting, listening to Marcello Lippi in Italy, and him talking about not being allowed to play as an attacking libero for Sampdoria in his day and swearing that he would produce attacking football as a coach. Quique Setién was made to chase across the pitches of Spain by Johan Cruyff's Barcelona and said there as he was running and sweating in the heat, if I coach, this is how I'll coach my teams to play. I don't want my players chasing around like this, being knackered and losing at the end because their brains have gone dead because their muscles are stealing all the blood and oxygen. And that's what Quique Setién coached his team in Las Palmas in the seasons leading up to last term. And Betis were beautiful to watch, absolutely beautiful to watch last season. And anyway, has just completed his transfer, been presented over the last 48 hours. And albeit that there must be an aftermath to a tournament like that for a player who's tucked away so many games during the season. And I think he's turning 30 or has just turned 30. But I'm expecting a lot from him and I'm excited to see him as the hard-running, passing linchpin in a team of great attraction and great skill. So let's settle then, because of your additional piece of information, which I wasn't expecting. Takashi Inoue is our unsung player of the tournament. How about that? You buy that?
Sold. So the second part of Ben's question is, what's been Graham's funniest moment from the tournament and the saddest?
Let's start with tears of sadness rather than tears of laughter. There's candidates, I'm afraid, Ben. I'd love to give you just one straight answer, but you know already, if you've been listening during the World Cup, that Iago Aspas, as well as being an automatic in my book to have started Spain's group games, absolutely without question should have been playing. And by the time it came to the Russia game, it stapled on Luis Rubiales' forehead, the president of the Spanish Federation. As he and Fernando Hierro spoke the day before the Russia game, it couldn't have been clearer that Aspas had to start. So for him to come on and be the one whose penalty is saved to put Spain out is just a kick in the chops that football will deliver to you time and time again, which is why we should all celebrate success, celebrate failure, celebrate doggedness, because the greats fail, the greats make mistakes, and whether Aspas can be regarded as a great or not, he is a great footballer and an entertainer and somebody who could have taken Spain through and allowed them to catch the momentum, catch the rhythm that they were lacking. And he was also the player with the bravery and the creativity and the acceptance of risk that they were lacking particularly in the midfield and in the attacking third, and therefore I was sad for him. I was sad for Marc-Andre ter Stegen. I have to say that you can't go on the attack. Jochen Löw, who prior to the tournament was coaching a side that everybody had down as probably joint favourites with Brazil, and his relationship with Manuel Neuer and Manuel Neuer's CV allows him the luxury of saying, even though you've been out for a year, I'm going to pick you. But to me, and I said this before the tournament on tape, it's not a retrospective thing. It was wrong not to see that this was an opportunity to allow the passing of the baton, to allow Neuer to be a supportive, important squad figure while looking for his fitness and his sharpness and maybe regaining his place in the months to come. But to take Stegen's World Cup away, given the season that he's just had, given that he is a younger, fresher, more hungry element who'd steered them through to the Confeds Cup last summer in the same stadia, in the same country, in the same temperatures, right from the start, it felt wrong. It felt like a bad message to send out. And simply because I respect him and I've met him and I like him well enough, I'm sad for Marc-Andre ter Stegen. And I could maybe close on saying, a sad moment for me was when Cavani comes off grimacing in that 2-1 win in the last 16, I think, where his absolutely brilliant goals, particularly the second, marked him as that type of player who you don't just want to pay to watch, who excites you, who can do so many things above and beyond his aerial ability or his physicality, because he is a very good footballer. It marked him down in my eyes that maybe this was going to be... Every tournament you look for the Paolo Rossi, who's going to explode into a form of scoring, 3-2-1 goals over three games or whatever it might be. And as Rossi did with a ridiculous and group qualification from Italy in 1982, and then Rossi scored a hat-trick, a brace, and won in the final sequentially. And Cavani looked like that until he comes off in that match, grimacing, shaking his head, and although it proved not to be a truly bad, you know, tear or rupture of the calf ligaments, it kept him out of the crucial game against France. Uruguay didn't look the same, and I was sad for Cavani that I can't imagine him being quite the same force at 34, nearly 35 in 4.5 years' time. So there are my tears of a clown for the great players. And, you know, I'm open to Ben, I'm open to suggestions. Martin, I'm open to suggestions. But while I was in Russia working hard, or eventually back here trying to slip into it as a spectator, I've seen fewer things funnier than Batshuayi picking the ball up and trying to kick it into the net, it bouncing off the post back into his face, the poor kid. He didn't get a lot of game time. He seems to me to be a better footballer than this Belgian squad and its quality allowed him to show, because he was up against proper competitors. But you know you've had a bad day when you do that and the world is watching.
In terms of the funniest moment, I don't know if it quite qualifies as funny, but I was quite amused to see Alan Russell embracing Gareth Southgate after that last-minute winner against Tunisia. And just to see Russell in that environment was really funny, because in a former life as a Cub reporter in Scotland, I used to, you know, regularly interview Alan Russell in the days where I wouldn't say he was the most prolific striker, but it's really interesting to see how he's reinvented himself. Very often it's taken as read that you have to have an illustrious playing career to step into that kind of technical role, but he's proved that you can develop specialist skills as a coach without necessarily having this garlanded playing career. So to see him in that environment, it wasn't funny, but I just thought, wow, that is amazing.
Well, and to keep the football theme, it's very Gregory from Gregory's Girl, where he says, "Modern girls, modern boys," and it's a modern Scot who, instead of growing up as my generation did, where the be-all and end-all was to insult the English, to beat the English, and then to taunt the English, there was a wee Scotsman helping them do not too badly at set pieces.
Yeah, good on him.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're moving on to the second question from Daryl Geraghty. He's one of our socios. Hola, Graham. On the tournament as a whole, despite the fantastic drama, storylines, etc., I can't help but be left with the feeling that the quality wasn't as high as it could have been. Too many upsets, lopsided draw, He says, I can't quite put my finger on it.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I respect Daryl because, you know, if you watch his output on Twitter, then he's a guy who devours sport. So, you know, if that's the way you feel, I respect it. I feel a little bit differently. I do think that, if not a dearth, there wasn't a superfluity of the technical players who control a game, whose passing range and whose passing regularity can give you the feeling that you're viewing, whether you're at the game, working, whether you're in the stands, whether you're watching on television. Sometimes we put our souls in the hands of these people, whether it would be, you know, Mesut Ozil playing brilliantly. England chose not to take Wilshere, understandably. Spain couldn't take Xavi, and Iniesta was an evolved kind of Iniesta. You know, there wasn't a player for France, I would argue, that was similar to, say, Djorkaeff or Platini in his time. And across the tournament, Daryl, one of the things where, if you know, I won't make my viewpoint, I won't, you know, force an answer to say I agree with you, because I've taken a lot of satisfaction from this tournament. I've seen things that I enjoy, and my journalistic career has grown up for the last 17, 18 years watching Barcelona in good and bad most closely, because I live in that city, because those players have been, you know, easier for me to access and meet and listen to and get to know, and therefore, you know, I would vouch all the time that for the brand of football that Xavi and Iniesta and Busquets want to play and want to see being played. But it can't be that way all the time, because it takes specially trained footballers. It takes footballers with great technique, great vision, and great nerve to produce that. I think it's a rarity when we get football like that. And also, I grew up not watching football like that, watching great, technically gifted, daring, brave, attacking, interesting, characterful footballers in Scotland when I was growing up. But, you know, I can appreciate and enjoy a really wide range of football. And, you know, I'm not saying that, for example, Xavi's in a high church where he doesn't appreciate other football. It's just that the football he wants to advocate and wants to see played at any club that he's associated with, then he's a purist. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, I'm more broad church and the people I admire most, like Xavi or Iniesta, aren't. But I don't know where your lack of satisfaction or that itch that you can't scratch comes from, Daryl. But I would say that I've seen individual excellence, player-wise. I've seen, you know, the emergence of a phenomenon. I've seen, even though Ronaldo and Messi go out early, each of them gave us traces of their genius, particularly in their goals. I've seen coaches unpick other teams' playing systems brilliantly and go for the juggler. You know, I've seen stadiums that have been full of noise and colour and happiness. And I've seen enough knockout goals and enough knockout drama, which we can often be deprived of, to understand that if this wasn't the single most technical World Cup ever, it certainly is up there in terms of its drama and how little you could absolutely rely on one result or another before the knockout games. And that across the board, happy people, the emergence of a phenomenon, clever coaches, players who showed bravery and character and produced more than we could have asked them to given their physical shape, and then a final with so many goals and so much drama. But overall, Mr. G, I'll take that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the next question is along similar themes. This is Adita Prabhakar And he says, hey, Graham, do you think a combination of long club seasons coupled with less prep time for coaches is shifting the way teams approach these tournaments? More pragmatic and less expansive attacking football, question mark.
It consistently amazes me what we ask of our elite footballers, that we know that they can run about for 10, 11 months of the year, but then we ask them to be ingenious, refreshed, sharp-edged, you know, creatively anarchic. We ask them to out-anticipate opponents who might have played 65% of the football they have. You know, above all, when we come to these post-mortems, we tend to be saying to them, entertain us. I think that, you know, while some of us want to go to a World Cup, and for some of us it's, you know, there's a huge amount of national pride at stake, the single biggest thing that the majority of people who watch a World Cup, because the majority of people who watch a World Cup don't have a dog in a fight because there's only 32 teams at the moment. It's entertainment, isn't it? If we're being truthful. And to ask them to play, you know, constant tournament football in Spain, it's, you know, two-legged Copa del Rey ties until now, which has been nonsensical. A League Cup in England. You look at even the healthy cultures like Germany, where there's a winter pause and fewer teams in the top league. It's still a money-making exercise when a gap comes and a friendly must be played. You saw just before the end of the season, Barcelona having to send a team down to South Africa to Soccer City, you know, in a midweek at a time when they'd been fighting for the treble. When it comes to a World Cup like this, I think that's a partial explanation for what we see. And as such, I go back to the previous answer, whereby I still think that we got a quality of football across that World Cup, which certainly our football authorities don't deserve, because they squeeze the life out of our footballers. They absolutely... And I go back to the fact that their bodies can continue to function, but if we want wit, if we want sparkle, you know, if we want fanfare and we want, you know, untrammelled brilliance, then in my opinion, we certainly can't ask any more of our footballers during domestic seasons before a big tournament. But there's another thing. It's if you talk about pragmatism, you know, I'm not certain how pragmatic England were. I'm not certain how pragmatic Belgium were. I don't think Croatia were particularly pragmatic. Now, I'm honing in on the final four. France were. You know, France shut off a couple of results after that Argentina shock, when they certainly could have gone to extra time. I think Messi created a chance late on, didn't he? And had one himself just before that. So they took a shock, and they did play relatively pragmatically after that point. However, what you get via the Champions League is an augmentation of applied, you know, analysis, the statistics, the way in which teams become accustomed to each other, you know, when to pause a game, when to... If there's not one player dictating that, coaches and team units are now far more sophisticated about when to push the accelerator, when not to, and are more sophisticated about most players. And I said this before, a lot of the players who made the knockout stages, and almost every player who made the last four, with the exception of England, who were... you know, deficient in terms of players who'd reached the Champions League final, won the Champions League final, reached the Europa League final, won the Europa League final. There were far fewer of them in England's team than there were in the other three. And what you saw is that, like, for example, I mean, my stats are going to be close, if not right, on the bullseye. When Mexico beat Germany and when Switzerland drew with Brazil, those counted as shocks. But in each of the cases, the Switzerland coach and the Mexico coach were able to count on a group of players who either had 240 or 270 Champions League appearances between them. And that narrows the gap. That means, and one of the things that I hear time and time again of elite players and elite players who've won the World Cup and are looking back at today's football and say, you don't know how hard it is to win the World Cup. You don't know how hard it is to shake off the teams that the European aristocrats, think are easy meat from Central America, from Asia, say from Africa, whatever it might be. There is a perception that these teams who aren't there regularly or who aren't tournament winners in the making are therefore easy to beat. And it's becoming absolutely apparent that they're not.
I really hope you're enjoying these World Cup shows. We've got huge plans for next season, but we do need your help to make them happen. Go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, a member, to join us, to support us. You'll get an extra big interview every month, plus lots of other bonus content. Last season, our members got 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, and Roberto Di Matteo. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Do it now, please.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.